You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Casey, and I'll be joined shortly by frequent co-host Dennis Wissman. When I was 10, like many in my generation, my answer to the question, what do you want to be when you grow up, was always the same: an astronaut. I wasn't able to achieve that dream, but today we'll be talking with someone who did. And we'll also be talking about, how do you follow that up? What's the second act for an astronaut? You may be thinking, what does that have to do with me? I'm not a space traveler, at least yet. What can I learn from this? I'd ask you to just think of, as you're listening to our conversation today, what are some ways that you could use some of your talents, interests, and passions in a different way after you leave the world of full-time work? Is there something you'd like to do that could make a difference for others? Our guest today is Nicole Stott. She's the author of the new book, Back to Earth: What Life in Space Taught Me About Our Home Planet and Our Mission to Protect It. Nicole Stott is a NASA astronaut, artist, and mom who spent over 100 days in space aboard the International Space Station. She founded the Space for Art Foundation and speaks to audiences around the world, including at the Vatican and the United Nations Historic Paris Agreement Gathering. She was featured in National Geographic's One Strange Rock, and the painting she created in space is displayed at the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum. She lives in Florida with her family. Nicole, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
So before we talk about what you're doing now, I was wondering if you could tell us the story of how you became an astronaut.
Wow. Well, I think it really started when I was a kid. I think that's true for everyone, for whatever they're doing in life, is, you know, something about what they were inspired by as a kid ekes into that somehow. And for me, that was growing up with parents who shared what they loved with me. That included my dad, who loved flying and building small airplanes and hanging out as a family at the local airport. We did that a lot as I was growing up. And I discovered there that, I mean, I wanted to fly myself, but I really wanted to know how things fly. You know, that led me to studying aeronautical engineering, which then led to me thinking, you know, man, if you want to know how airplanes fly, why would you not want to know how rocket ships fly? And ended up very fortunately with a job as an engineer with NASA at the Kennedy Space Center. And of course, I'm of the age that I had the chance to see that first moon landing as well. And I think even at 6 or 7, you realize that that's a really extraordinary thing. Even though at the time I had no sense of that being a possibility for me at all. It's just like, wow, that's really cool. You know, walking outside, knowing there's two people walking around the moon and one orbiting it. That's a pretty exceptional thing. And I don't know, it just led its way to me finally thinking, while I was working at Kennedy Space Center and over probably about a 9-year period of getting space shuttles ready for astronauts to fly, discovering that, man, you know, 99.9% of an astronaut's job is not flying in space. It's here on Earth. And the majority of it, as best I could tell, was a lot like what I was already doing. So that encouraged me to at least think about it, because up till that point, I thought, man, that's something other special people get to do. Why would they ever pick me? Yeah, I could have actually talked myself out of a really wonderful opportunity. And then, taking this long story short, I spoke to some people that I considered to be mentors that I worked with at Kennedy Space Center. And really, they did nothing more than encourage me to pick up the pen and fill out the application. And I think without that, I would not have ever done it on my own. So believe me, I thank them when I see them.
So what did the experience of being in space over 100 days teach you about our planet?
Well, I think it taught me a lot, actually. And I think it really had to do with our connection to the planet, right? I mean, I was in this place that's, I say, is up till now is the furthest I've ever been from Earth, right? Because I'm still hopeful that I might, got to be hopeful that you might fly in space again. And I'm counting on getting to the moon someday. No pressure on my husband. That's why I live that on him. But, you know, at that point, I was the furthest I've ever been from Earth and felt more connected to everything and everyone that I knew was down there and the planet itself than I had maybe even while I was on it. And so this sense of interconnectivity, I think, is what really impressed me, perhaps even overwhelmed me a little bit. And through that, and in all the complexity of flying in space and being there, I think the thing that really came out to me were simple lessons, right? Things we learn when we're little kids, and that somehow they go to the back of our brain when I think they really should be in the front of our mind all the time. Like, oh my gosh, we live on a planet. I mean, we all know that, right? We're all Earthlings, only border that matters, that thin blue line of atmosphere, and how really we should all be living like crewmates and not passengers here on Spaceship Earth. I think that was the reality of it for me.
Nicole, in your book, you mentioned the relationships that you had with all these, your peers and all the people, all the other astronauts. And how did that play with the your feeling of interconnectivity? How important was that, the socialization and everything?
Well, I think it's really important. I think it was one of the keys for sure for how we could be and still are successfully working as this international team in space on this mechanical life support system for over 20 years now, you know, over 15 countries represented there, 5 international space agencies. That, I don't know, just the power in those relationships, I think, is really, really significant. And again, it plays to, okay, you've got these 6 or 7 people on board this space station, you know, this international community. You've got tens of thousands of people on the Earth across these different countries supporting that, making it happen. And just a wonderful model for how we could be living in a planetary sense as this international community, as Earthlings, as crewmates.
So, Nicole, you were the first to create a painting in space. What was that like? And how did it lead to what you're doing today?
Well, I'll tell you, that was completely, you know, to paint in space. Again, I'm so thankful to somebody who encouraged me to do something I wouldn't have thought of on my own. And my friend, Mary Jane Anderson, who was one of the, what we call flight crew equipment people, our support people on the ground, who helped us get all of our stuff ready to fly. You know, everything that we were given officially. And then we have this little bag of things we can bring, personal items. And I was really focused on bringing things like pictures of my family and friends to, you know, be able to take pictures of them while I was in space to share when I got home, or my son's little stuffed animal that he wanted me to take, or, you know, the t-shirt from my high school, that kind of thing, you know, sharing the experience. And Mary Jane reminded me, she's like, you know, Nicole, you're going to be up there for months. You will have some free time. So you should bring something that you enjoy doing on Earth with you. I mean, if you want to. And so I thought of the little watercolor kit. I brought that with me. I am so thankful to her. I mean, it is one of, really and truly is a personal highlight for me from the spaceflight. Because I think it's like so many things, it's like we're putting the human in human spaceflight by doing things like that. Playing music, doing art, writing poetry, taking pictures, that kind of thing. It was, of course, a little different than painting with watercolors here on Earth because everything floats. So, you know, I couldn't dip my brush into a cup of water because we don't have cups of water. So I would squirt little balls of water out of these, you know, these drink bags that we have out of the straw. And then I would dip my brush into that and then watch, you know, kind of in amazement how the ball of water just floated around the end of the brush and then how that got sucked up by the paint and mushed it around and then brought this colored ball of water back out. And you had to be really careful because if you swung the brush around, and that happens down here on Earth too, but if you flung it around, all that paint's going to go everywhere. And painting was different. You know, if I touched the brush, the paper just sucked up all of the colored water at one time. So I kind of had to drag the ball of water with the brush along the paper. And I don't know, it was just kind of a cool way to experience the whole microgravity environment too. And then of course, you're not looking out the window and painting what you're seeing out the window because at you know, at 5 miles a second or 17,500 miles an hour, you know, you're not going to get the brush to the paper before the thing you were looking at the window moves. So I had to print a picture of it and paint from that, but it was awesome, really awesome.
So you write about your decision in your book to retire from NASA in 2015. And I know our listeners would love to hear a little bit about what was that experience like for you?
Well, it was difficult. I mean, I think in my heart, I knew I was ready to move on and do something different. I was really feeling, you know, more and more attracted to sharing the experience, to communicating that to as many people as I could, finding my way to do that. And I knew that I really wouldn't be able to do that while still with NASA. But it was difficult because, you know, for so many reasons. I mean, number one, I was in line to fly in space again. I probably would have flown in space again had I not retired. And to take yourself out of that, I mean, that's a difficult thing to do. But I asked myself, I mean, really honestly had to say, okay, do I need to fly in space again? And the answer was no, I didn't need to. I want to. Ask me when I'm 95, I will want to fly in space again, but it wasn't a need for me. I knew I could still keep in touch with the program and the people there and continue to have some influence as an advisor or working through different companies and that kind of thing. And then I think the other thing was that if for our family, my son was about to start eighth grade and then was going to be moving on to high school, of course. And we knew that we didn't want to be in Houston for that, you know, for a couple of reasons. But one being that in the longer term, we knew we weren't going to want to settle in Houston. That wasn't going to be our retirement place, if you will. We knew Florida was going to be that place. So your kid goes to high school somewhere and that kind of tags you there. So, you know, that was part of it as well. But it was a very difficult decision. It was the right one, though. I'm so happy that I can say it was the right one and feel really good about where we are with it, the things I'm doing now, where my son is and what he's doing, my husband's work, all of it. I think, you know, when you get that gut and in your heart feeling, you know it's right. And I'm happy that I can say that it was the right decision.
It's a tough decision and there's a lot of uncertainty. When did you know when you had found your next mission?
Well, I think it was shortly after retiring, and we were still in Houston. One of my friends, Gordon Andrews, Johnson Space Center, invited me over to have a little conversation about this art project thing that he was getting involved with. This artist in downtown Houston who had started the art and medicine program, MD Anderson's Pediatric Cancer Center, he wanted to do something space-related. And so Gordo invited me to participate in that. And I'll tell you, the first session we did painting with these kids at the hospital, I knew, I'm like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to be bringing my love of space and, you know, my love of art together in this way that I didn't even know about, this therapeutic, you know, kind of art therapy thing that was, I mean, I guess I knew about it, but I just wasn't really aware of how powerful it could be. And in that one session, I just saw, wow, this could really be something different and very meaningful to be a part of. And I, you know, haven't turned back since.
And tell us about the work you're doing with the Space for Art Foundation that you created.
Well, the Space for Art Foundation, it fell out of those sessions with kids in the hospital and with Ian Sion, who was the artist there. I mean, that first session that I told you about, it's like, I mean, I have vivid memory of sitting there with this little girl who was going through she was going through cancer treatment at the time. And we were painting, you know, these little paintings that were going to become part of this art space suit, which, you know, so cool. And she's going through, as were all of these kids and their families in this place, you know, going through what you hope is the worst thing she would ever have to go through in her entire life, right? And yet we're sitting there and we're talking about space exploration and she's painting and she's telling me about what she's thinking about for her own future. And then out of nowhere, she just looks at me and she's like, you know, Miss Nicole, what you do as an astronaut, that must be a lot like what I'm going through here in the hospital. And I mean, something like that, I goosebumps, you know, thinking about it, because I'm like, how in the world the 7 or 8 year old be comparing what she's going through to what I went through in space? And then she just proceeds with, yeah, you know, you don't get to see your family and friends the same way. You just can't go outside anytime you want. You have to eat all different kinds of food. Your body's changing. They're doing all kinds of tests on you. I think you have radiation in space, all this stuff that was just so like beyond her years' wisdom, right? Just kind of just spewing out of her in an effortless way that, again, that reinforced that, okay, this is my next mission in life. But it also made me know that this was something that needed to be about more than just randomly going and painting with kids in hospitals. And so over time, Ian and I, along with a couple other of our partners, one being ILC Dover, who is the company that makes our real spacesuits, the one I did a spacewalk in when I was in space, the ones that were the Apollo moonwalkers wore, they volunteered with us since the very beginning to quilt together these art spacesuits from the kids' artwork. And we just knew it needed to be something that we could take beyond just one hospital in one city. And that's where the Space for Art Foundation came from.
Reminds me a lot of the importance of purpose in life.
Yep.
And you actually tell, one of the stories you tell in your book is about a gentleman, his name is Mark, and he mentioned something about the secret to a happy life is having a purpose. So, and we see a lot of that with people that are retiring, and purpose is so important for them. But, you know, I was wondering if you can reflect on a little bit about that and how important the purpose was to you, not only from what you were doing, but what you saw in some of the people that you worked with and some of the people that were doing the foundation work or building things, the importance of purpose in life and what you learned from that.
I totally agree. And sometimes I think that gets buried, right? And all of what we're doing, we're so hustling to do whatever it is we're doing, we forget about why, why that is. And I think in retiring from NASA, I was able to kind of sit back and really let what was coming to me and how I was pursuing this post-NASA life build that purpose. And this, you know, was going to be me retiring, using art to share the experience of being in space with as many people as possible. You know, for two reasons, really. Everyone should know there's an International Space Station and the work that's going on up there, right? What we're doing in space that's ultimately all about improving life on Earth. And everyone should know this connection we have to our planet as our life support system and all the life we share it with. And I thought that was going to be it for me. And in doing that, I really discovered my purpose that extended on that by working with these kids, right? And so our mission statement is that we are uniting a planetary community of children through the awe and wonder of space exploration and the healing power of art. And it's incredible to see. I mean, it really, really is incredible to see how something like space and this allowing the creativity of these kids to come out and then them knowing that it's coming together through, I don't know, through all of the kids' artwork coming together, that they can kind of transcend the experience they're having and really and truly think about their future. That's incredible to me. And the people that we're working with this, you know, are kind of our small team within the Space for Art Foundation. Ian Sion, certainly, I mean, he's the artistic genius behind most of this stuff, especially the spacesuits. And I think from the very beginning, he was the one who, and gently, you know, he wasn't like, okay, Nicole, you have to come do this stuff. You got to do it. It was just like inviting me to participate in these events and to see the power, I think, of what was going on through art and creativity and a inspirational thing like space and how impactful that is for these kids. And then, you know, David with ILC Dover, how a company like ILC Dover, like the preeminent spacesuit maker, the spacesuit maker, just saw the significance in this too and have been with us since the beginning, every step of the way. And Maria Lanas, who I like just coincidentally met because I saw a piece of art she'd done in Dulles Airport and thought how, you know, there just seemed to be a synergy with what she had done and what we were starting to do with Space for Art, that and how just effortless it was to pull her in. And she's been just a powerhouse in this ever since with her art and creativity and access to people around the world, and our partners in Russia that are taking on kind of a parallel effort, very similar to Space for Art. And we know we can count on them anytime we're doing the project. We know that we'll be partners in that. And just people coming in. I mean, and you guys, I'm sure, have experienced this too. When you're doing something you really, I think, is coming from your heart, it's like other people want to be a part of it. They see the good in it, and they want to offer up their time, their talent to what's being done there as well. We're very fortunate in that.
An amazing ripple effect, isn't it?
Yep.
When you really think about it, giving your gifts to others, and all of a sudden you get them back, and goes on. Tremendous. Thanks so much for sharing that. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's incredible. I'll just say too, you know, we started in that one hospital, and Ian and I knew that it was bigger than just the one hospital, right? And the kids there. And I just have to, because it makes me so happy to think about this, that we went from creating an art space suit and other projects with kids in that one hospital to now our latest suit called Beyond has art from at least one kid in every country on the planet. And we built it as the ambassador for Spaceship Earth with this idea that it could communicate this intersection between personal and planetary health. And we had the suit on display. We were invited to display the suit and the story at COP26 just this past November in Glasgow at the UN Climate Change Conference. It's just incredible how all of this can come together, how the stories just all build on each other, because, you know, they're really about how we live as crew here and trying to share that message.
So you mentioned climate change, and your book, Back to Earth, takes on the topic of protecting the planet. I know that's a huge topic, but what's your brief assessment on where we're at, the consequences we face, and what do you think really needs to be done?
Well, I think, you know, I wish I could say I knew where we're, you know, I wish there was some definitive way for me to say where we're at. I think we understand what the consequences can be, and we're already seeing some of that around the world in different places. I mean, we were having a conversation earlier before our session started where just in our local communities, how we're experiencing differences in our climate. The climate is changing. And that can seem so subtle, right? Oh yeah, it's just warmer this year than it. But then when we look at the trends over time, we see longer term changes. And those kinds of things are happening for people in other places on the planet where, I mean, they're really having to consider, hey, do I need to move somewhere else? Is life on this little island in the South Pacific not going to be able to survive as we have for years? I think that, I mean, major changes need to be made. And I look at organizations like NASA that I, you know, worked for years. And with things like this $1 trillion infrastructure bill going on, and I'm like, okay, what in this bill here, just in the US, are we taking advantages of the technology of what NASA can do for us to solve these problems? And, you know, those are the kinds of things I'm trying to learn more and more about and become more aware of. But I think, and I tried to share this in the book too, is that there are a lot of really incredibly talented people already working on implementing solutions to these problems. And with all of, and I know I only touched, like, skimmed the surface of it, like what, like 12 people that I talked to, and exponentially, there's more than that around the world. And I really believe that those kinds of efforts coming together over time will be impactful. One of my main points in the book is that we all need to find our thing too, right? We need to become aware of what's going on in our own local community, which then affects the global community and can allow us to have real strength in, I don't know, creating solutions, providing part of the solution to the problem.
One of the things that brought home to me that I think about astronauts, I think about you're up and out of space and you're looking at the air and you're looking at all that, but you spent a lot of time talking about the ocean and the power and what's going on in the ocean and how it affects the planet.
Right.
Can you briefly just give us some insights on that?
Yeah, I think as my friend Dave Vaughn, who Dr. Dave Vaughn, I'll say, likes to say, is like, you know, do you like to breathe kind of thing? It's like every other breath comes to us through the ocean. And I never really thought about that before, you know, how all of what's going on beneath the surface is so significant to our life. And I can't remember the numbers, but I just learned recently too about, you know, seagrass. You know, who thinks about seagrass, right? But the amount of CO2 that seagrass captures is significantly more than what the Amazon rainforests do for us. So, but it's all, you know, beneath the surface. We don't see it. It's not part of our daily awareness. And so I think the ocean is a wonderful way for us to learn more about how we are able to survive here on Earth and the value that it provides to us and all of that, its significance to our life support system. And then we'll start to care about it too, right? It's that old, if you love it, you'll care about it or you'll take care of it thing. But it's beneath the surface, which makes it hard for us. And I get it, you know, in our daily lives, we're not under the ocean. Some of the best preparation for me to go to space was living underwater for 18 days, to be in that kind of environment, to experience the extremes of that, to understand how it would be to live in space. And I think that's true for us here on the surface of Earth, too. If we think about our planet as a spaceship, we start to realize that all of these factors that we consider when we're undersea laboratory or when we're in space on a spaceship become even more critical to us, like how much CO2 is in our atmosphere, the integrity of our thin atmosphere, the health and well-being of all of our crewmates. It becomes part of what you just have to consider on a daily basis.
Yeah, that interconnectedness, right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So you mentioned you interviewed 12 people for your book, and there's a lot of great stories and anecdotes about those people and people you've worked with. I wonder if you could share one story with all of us about someone who's really inspired you.
Well, all of those people that I interviewed inspired me. And I hope that people will read, you know, the introduction and the conclusion to the book too. You know, the conclusion really shares the story of what, you know, from the ocean standpoint of what we were just talking about with Dr. David Bond, who discovered this revolutionary method for at a accelerated rate to what happens naturally and bringing the reef back to life in a way that it can sustain itself back in that natural cycle. One of the people I think that was really surprising to me, because I didn't know about him before I was getting ready to write the book, I was introduced to him through another friend, is David Litschwager. And he's an explorer, a photographer, a nature photographer. And I had actually known about him, but not known who he was, through an image that he took. It's one of those iconic images. It's like the baby albatross with its that had died out on one of these Pacific islands. And they had opened its belly up and there was so much plastic. I mean, the bird's belly is filled with plastic. And then they lay it out on this white piece of paper and take this picture of it. And that was his, you know, his picture. And I didn't know that, but I was introduced to him. And I think something that he shared with me that really sticks with me now is this idea of mutual regard. And I mean, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it too. And I just got back from a trip to Antarctica and, you know, got to experience up close as much as I ever will be to penguins in the wild and seals and the place and the life around us. And there's not a time now that goes by where, even with my own dogs, that I'm not like making this connection eye to eye with the other life around me. And just thinking about this idea of mutual regard, and which then drives you to contemplate, okay, what's life like for this animal or this other human even on Earth? And how should I be considering that and respecting that? And I mean, that really, those two words are huge to me. And I think it underlies every good thing that we want to do. Taking care of each other, taking care of the life around us, taking care of the planet in a way that will allow us to not just survive, but to thrive here just by acknowledging mutual regard.
So I know our listeners, we've been doing this podcast for 4 years now, and I know that there are some people listening right now who are thinking about climate change and they get it, but they're also thinking, well, what can I do about that? I'm just one person. And I'd like to read a quote from your book and just ask for your comments on it, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I've been so impressed by the positive impact that one person can make in the world when they experience the reality of a new perspective and are inspired to take action in response.
Yeah, I think that really underlies what I hope people will realize for themselves and all this. I mean, I really want this book to be, I don't want it to be this checklist. Oh, here's all the things I have to do to help solve the problems of the world. But I want people to reflect on the stories in the book and hopefully the inspiration through the people that I've interviewed and they've done to see that just by every single one of those people had a point in their lives where they looked around them, whether it was from space or it was in the ocean or in a classroom. I mean, wherever it was where they were finally like, oh my gosh, I'm seeing this thing, I'm experiencing this thing in a whole new way. And now I know I can take action in a way that will help me be a positive part of this. I hope everybody can find that. I mean, we've been going these last 2 years through COVID, right? Everybody has had to isolate in a way that they've probably never had to before. And I had several interviews about, oh, how did what you're going through now with, you know, the lockdowns and stuff compare to what you lived in space? And are there ways to that you dealt with when you were in space that you're using here? And that, yes, I mean, the ways I dealt with being isolated in space from my family, from my friends, from Earth as nature, I tried to use here. And I think it's wonderful when you can just step out your own, look out your own windows or step out into your own backyard and really consider where you are. Not that it's just your backyard, but holy moly, my feet are on a planet. Look at the nature around you and just appreciate it in a different way. And I think that opens up your heart, your mind to wanting to be aware of more and more around you. And that kind of thing, that awareness, I think drives our need to take action as well.
So last question, if I might, and I know this is another tough one because there's so much in your book and it's hard to boil it down, but what's one key message you'd want readers to take away from Back to Earth?
Well, I think, the whole reason I wrote the book was to show people the way that we have very peacefully and successfully been living on this mechanical life support system in space, right? And the way that we do that is to live like crewmates. You know, none of us are passengers on that spaceship. Every one of us has to actively be involved as crew. And if there's one message I would like people to take away from Back to Earth is that we all need to find our way to accept that most important role, I think, as crewmates here on Spaceship Earth, not as passengers. It's a very different thing.
Well said. We really appreciate you making the time and great to hear stories. It's a great book and certainly we've taken a lot from it, not only the book, but our conversation today. So thank you once again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Nicole, I'll always remember your three simple truths, right? We live on a planet. As Earthlings, protected by the same blue line. You said that over and over again, and I love that. So thanks for your time.
Thank you. Absolutely.
That was a great conversation with Nicole. It certainly broadened my perspective and horizons. What are your takeaways from this conversation, Dennis?
Yeah, thank you. And I echo that. Certainly raised my level of awareness. Her book was great. Two dimensions that I got from the conversation today and certainly from reading her book. One was about transitions, retirement, and things. And the points the themes that I kind of took away that I think relate to that are important to people are, you know, the first thing she talked about was asked her Joe about what, you know, what inspired her to become an astronaut and what chose this path is her curiosity. She demonstrated that early on in her life. She had a really good role model in her dad who took her flying and she was able to experiment with different things. So, you know, when we think back into things that maybe might have inspired us when we were younger, those are things to take a look at when we're thinking about what we're going to do next with our lives, perhaps. Certainly at this retirement stage, perhaps. The other thing was decisions that she made along the way when she transitioned from being an astronaut to a different kind of purpose and pursuit of purpose. And we talked about the importance of purpose in her life and the purpose of finding meaning in the artwork and the particular Space for Art Foundation that she founded. Was a phenomenal way to continue giving her gifts to others and sharing with others. And we see a lot of that also. That's the important, when people choose to retire from something or retire from a main career, the importance of having a purpose and sharing their gifts with others is also really drives meaning in their lives. And then the last point that I took away on this dimension was the importance of interconnectivity. You know, she meant the importance of that we're living on a connected Earth. And, you know, I can't do justice to everything she said, but clearly, you know, the ecosystem and the spaceship Earth that we are part of, you know, it was that interrelationships that she had with the people that she took these trips with and worked with over the years was just enormous, and the ripple effect that she had in getting to know them all, and the impact they've had on each other's lives. So, you know, the message I got there is the importance of connectivity as we certainly throughout our lives, but really important as we age. So those were the climate change thing was so critically important. That was the other dimension. It raised my level of awareness to areas where I just didn't understand things as well. And this helped me really understand how important it is that we take this very seriously. So those were my takeaways, Joe. What about yourself?
So echo your comments on climate change. Certainly eye-opening. Clearly something was on my radar prior to this, but certainly the depth of exploration that she and perspective that she adds is noteworthy. I jotted down four things that are looking at some of her comments through a retirement lens. So know that going in. The first one is on climate change itself. And that I think if people are planning for retirement, particularly if they're thinking about a move, climate change needs to be on your radar. It's getting some attention in the media, but not enough, and it'll get more. But it should be something you think about if you think about moving to a new home. Second is the appreciation that you talked about with nature. Really appreciate knowing where you are and increasing your awareness of what's around us. Third is the whole topic of making a difference and her comments about as one person, you can really make a difference, but to find your thing, find the thing that you think you can move the needle a little bit because it all really matters. And then finally, I think that she talked about this in the space context of being a good crewmate and that we really want to don't take a passive approach, you want to take an active approach. And I think that applies to you know, thinking about your retirement and how go about living life to really do an audit, how active versus passive are you? How active or passive are you in planning for retirement, both financially and non-financially? Thank you for listening to Retirement Wisdom Podcast. Our mission is to help people balance their financial planning with more attention to the non-financial side of getting ready for life and retirement. You can find all of our episodes, all four seasons, at retirementwisdom.com. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.